This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Some are describing today as a historic day, the day the nation finally moved forward to do something about global catastrophic climate change. The Obama administration announced proposals today that would require coal-burning power plants to reduce their CO2 emissions by 30% by 2030.
This is not just about disappearing polar bears and melting ice caps, although I like polar bears and I know about melting ice caps. This is about protecting our health, and it is about protecting our homes. This is about protecting local economies, and it's about protecting jobs.
That was Gina McCarthy, the EPA administrator, announcing the move today, and she's putting the highlight on public health over concerns about climate change. States will be given the options to figure out how they cut their CO2 emissions. The San Antonio CPS Energy is reacting to this proposed news. They just concluded a press conference on the issue. TPR's Joey Palacios joins us live with the latest. Joey, you there?
Yes. How are you, Dave?
Doing good. So what did CPS Energy say about these proposed regulations?
So CPS Energy called this press conference really fast after the EPA made these announcements, and they're saying that as an entity, they're already on track to reduce their carbon emissions by about 4.5 million tons, or about 25% by 2020. So they say they're already on track. And one of the ways that they're planning on doing that is shuttering two of its coal plants. There's the Dealey 1 and 2 units. These are over off by Calaveras Lake, and they've already had plans to shutter these plants for about the past 3 or 4 years, and these two plants should actually be completely closed by 2018. Now, CPS Energy already has another plant, another coal-fired plant. It's called Spruce 1 and Spruce 2. They collectively make about, generate about 1,200 megawatts or so of power. The Dealey unit generates about 800 megawatts of power. And as I said, they were already anticipating something like this, and so they went ahead and bought the Rio Nogales natural gas plant in Seguin to compensate for this 800 megawatts they're losing from Dealey. Rio Nogales generates about 800, and CPS Energy already has plans to build another 400 megawatts or so of solar.
So they're basically saying this is not this is not going to wipe out jobs here in San Antonio.
No, this is pretty much, they said it's going to be business as usual. There's not, the impact here really won't be felt. There was, because they've already had these changes in place, and they said that rates won't go up. They also won't go down. I mean, it's pretty much going to be the status quo throughout. Now, they did say that even if the EPA makes changes to these plans, you know, over their year-long period of review, if the EPA makes any type of changes, that CPS Energy is still going to go through with these plans that they have, regardless, even if the EPA decides later down the road to not go through with this.
Okay. Joey Palacios, thank you so much for joining us. You just came back live from a press conference with CPS Energy talking about how the new EPA proposed regulations would impact them. So if you have a question or a comment about these new EPA rules, we definitely want to hear from you. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Jody Freeman, is a professor of law and the founder of the Environmental Law Program at Harvard, and Megan Berg, she is a lawyer at Baker Botts Law Firm, and she will be representing several law energy firms that have coal interests. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So,
hi, thanks.
So, Jody, you had you wrote in the New York Times an op-ed talking about anticipating these rules coming down and saying that teaching an old law new tricks. What old law, what new tricks?
Well, EPA is implementing the air pollution law that's been on the books for about 40 years called the Clean Air Act, and it's using part of that law that's designed to ensure that existing older sources of pollution are controlled somehow. And this rule is aimed at the older, dirtier coal-fired plants in particular, but all power plants, to try to require improvements over time in how much CO2 they produce. So it's a very ambitious rule, and as I wrote in the op-ed, it's meant to be flexible so the different states can adopt whatever measures make the best sense for them. As you just heard in the piece you did on what's happening in San Antonio, there are a lot of states already making progress. They can use the credits of what they're doing now toward complying with this new rule. And so I think you'll see around the country states deciding to opt for whatever energy efficiency makes the sense for them, or transitioning to more natural gas might make sense for them, or investing in energy efficiency might make sense for them. I think you'll see a kind of different menu around the country for how to meet the new rule.
San Antonio Congressman Lamar Smith, he is the chair of the Science, Space, and Technology Committee. He put out a statement today condemning these new proposed regulations, calling them all pain and no gain. He says that the Clean Air Act was never intended to regulate carbon. So is that true, Jody?
Well, here's the answer to that. The Supreme Court in 2007 said that carbon pollution and other greenhouse gases, in fact, are air pollutants under the Clean Air Act. So the EPA now has to deal with them under that law. And it's a very flexible statute. The law gives the agency quite a bit of room to maneuver to address pollution problems. So I don't think it's quite right to say that the law can't do this. I think you're going to hear, and you're hearing it already from people opposed to this in industry and in some of the states, you're going to hear a lot of Chicken Little stuff. The sky is falling. The economy is going to be in terrible shape because of this. And I think it's you ought to take that with a grain of salt. Every time EPA announces a new regulation, that's the story we hear. And over the last 40 years, we've never seen it happen. We see, in fact, industry finds creative, innovative ways to comply. Often when they have to meet air pollution targets, they find such efficiencies that it turns out saving money. Some of these investments in cleaner energy are going to actually save consumers money because they will be creating a more efficient energy system across their state. So I don't put a lot of weight on the kind of hysterical reactions that we're going to hear in the next little while. I have faith that the utility industry knows what it's doing and can achieve these cuts at a reasonable cost.
Well, I want to get Megan Burge in on this. She is the lawyer with Baker Botts. We got to go to the break really quickly. But, Megan, I mean, what's your quick reaction to the announcements today?
My quick reaction is that EPA got a number of things right. They need to maximize state flexibility. They need to credit early retirements and really sort of promote the transition to clean energy that's possible. But they also had a few things that missed the mark, and we're hoping that through the rulemaking progress and through the outreach efforts that EPA has said it wants to engage in, that we can correct those going forward.
So there's going to be a negotiation that goes on in this process and an elaborate dance, and we will see what we end up with. But here's the first negotiation move. So we'll continue looking at that. If we got questions and comments, we invite our listeners to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the new EPA rules for carbon CO2 cuts. This is The Source on KSTX.
Support for KSTX comes from Vantage Bank Texas, providing small and medium-sized business loans, tailored banking solutions, and financial management tools. Listening, understanding, delivering. More at VantageBank.com.
You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about President Obama's announcement, proposed rules for the EPA to cut carbon dioxide emissions by 30% by 2030. From our Facebook page, Sandra wrote this: the change will cost money and jobs. It will make new ones in different areas, and that is progress. Isn't it better to move forward in the interest of our planet and our health and property than do nothing because it's too hard and we're afraid that we have to have this change? If you want to join the conversation, the number is 210-614-8980. And our guest, we've got Jody Freeman. She is a law professor and she's a founder of Environmental Law Program at Harvard. And Megan Burge, she is with the law firm of Baker Botts Law, and she represents some of these large energy firms that do burn coal. So back to you, Megan. You were saying that you hope to see some changes, that there's some. This is a process. Where do you want to see those changes? What are the hard points for you right now?
Well, like I said, there's a lot of good things that we're seeing here, and we feel like EPA did listen to some of the outreach that we engaged in earlier. But where we're really seeing some of the areas that we'd like to work with the agency on is the state targets that they've set. You know, EPA said on a technical conference call that they had today that they'd set these targets for reductions, taking into account things like demand-side management and other, what we would say, non-jurisdictional resource reductions. And what we mean by that is that sources that are not within the control of the source category, the power plants that are affected by this rule. So what that means is they're saying, here's an amount of reductions that we think are achievable within this state, and here's where we want you to get state. And this includes things like RPS, this renewable portfolio standards, this includes variable generation, this includes demand-side management. But the actual source category that's on the hook for this is your coal and gas-fired units. And a gas-fired unit or a coal-fired unit can't require, you know, demand-side management reductions. They can't require the consumer to go out and engage in these reductions. So where we'd like to see EPA focus the targets is on what is actually achievable by these sources. But as far as engaging with states to meet these goals, as far as recognizing early actions and state leadership, you know, we support all of that on EPA's take. We support the baseline that they're looking at using. I just think that they need to look in closely at what the text of 111D says, which is that these are standards that apply to sources that would otherwise be regulated if they were new.
Jody Freeman, I'm thinking back on the Dodd-Frank situation where they tried to put these big reforms on a financial sector. And when it went through the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C., we really saw the industry lobbyists get into the nitty-gritty and do all they can to pull as many teeth as they could out of that situation, out of the law, and basically render it inert. So are you afraid that could happen with this?
Well, it's interesting you say that. Now, you know, with Dodd-Frank, it was Congress adopting a new law and the lobbyists sort of descending on Congress. Here we have EPA adopting a regulation, and you're right, the same phenomenon. You've got a lot of stakeholders pressing EPA in one direction or another. So the position your other guest is arguing for is lower stringency, right, targets that are not as demanding. On the other hand, you've got environmental groups and public health groups and others arguing for more stringency. They would say that EPA's target is actually pretty conservative. They would say there's so much more energy efficiency out there. You can make your buildings more efficient. You can run your appliances more efficiently. You can do so many things that are cheap to reduce energy consumption. Those advocates would say EPA has been too easy on the states. So that's the fight you'll see. In the comment period now, where everybody can file their opinions with the agency, and the agency has to consider them and then comes back with a revised final rule, you'll see this dynamic playing out. I do want to make one comment, David, about what I think the core legal fight is about, if that's of interest.
Yeah.
And it really is about this question of, do you set targets for the states that are based just on what the individual plants can do on site, kind of within their own fence line, you know, to improve their own operational efficiency at the old, say, coal-fired power plants. Do you set a standard just based on that? If that's the approach that we were to wind up with, it would be a very minimal approach indeed. You would wind up with something like 6% probably maximum improvement. It's not a great deal of improvement, and that's because inside the units themselves, there's not that much cost-effective equipment change and efficiency enhancement you can do on site. What EPA has said, and this is what the fight's over, what EPA has said is, look, when we talk about setting a standard of performance for these facilities, it's fair enough for us to look at the whole system, the whole electricity system, to say, what can it do? And the reason they feel confident about that in looking broader, about looking at energy efficiency, looking at reducing demand-side reductions. The reason they feel comfortable with that is the law itself says that they should set standards based on the best system of emission reduction. So that's the fight. How stringent can this be? Are you limited to just what an individual facility can do, or can you look at what the electricity system can do as a whole and then apply a more stringent set of standards?
All right, let's go to our phone lines. We got some callers who want to join the conversation. If you want to do that, the number is 614-8980. George has called in. George, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm concerned there's so much room for corruption in this carbon credit markets. You know, they say Wall Street, you can't really control them. It's so rigged and corrupt. You know, when you try to prosecute these people, they're so big that it's just you can't control them. And I was just wondering, what do you foresee on how we can control corruption in the carbon credit markets?
All right, George, thanks for that phone call. It's a good question. So, Jody, how do you police these carbon credits? We've already seen some evidence of scams with people saying they're doing offsets, and then those offsets never actually happen.
Yeah, I think you have to be very careful about designing the system so that you have a monitoring capability and a system that only allows credits that can be proven to be real, where you can point to the reductions and show they're real, they happen, they're enforceable. And actually, I think it's right to worry about this, but we've had some experience now with trading systems, and I think we've learned a lot. We've learned from Europe's trading system. We've learned from the Northeast states, which have joined together in a trading system now called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And I think the EPA and the states are in a place now where they're in a better position to design these kinds of trading schemes. And I should say that this standard, this sort of 30% target for improving electricity emissions, I should say it doesn't force anybody to do anything. It doesn't, in the sense of it doesn't force trading schemes, market trading. It doesn't force cap and trade on anyone. It doesn't force anybody to shut down coal plants. It says, here's your target. Now figure out the best pathway for your state. So I think there are a lot of design options here.
So Megan Burge, we're at Baker Botts Law. To your clients, are they leaning one way or another, trying to comply with this law? Will they go towards offsets, or will they try to scrub? Will they come up with switching to natural gas?
What we're seeing now with our clients is that they've actually already been on the forefront of this and out in front of it for years. I mean, many of our clients, for example, the Colorado Clean Jobs, Clean Air Act, for example, reductions taken voluntarily by some of our clients in the South. I mean, this is not something new. Many states have gotten out in front of this issue. So you see increased production of wind. I mean, that's a great example. In Texas, you're seeing a large amount of wind being brought on and brought online in the next 10 years. You're seeing new investments in renewables. So I think for a lot of our clients, you know, this rulemaking, you know, from your other guests, I don't want this to make it sound like all industries running around yelling around the sky is falling, because EPA is really, I mean, the energy industry is at a crossroads right now where they're dealing with a number of various environmental regulations, like you heard CPS Energy. They've got variety of things out there. That's why they say they're going to make these changes anyway. And you're seeing that. You're seeing low gas prices. We're at a point where the energy industry is changing, and EPA has an opportunity with this rule to either lock in and incentivize those changes or to really set things back and make this more costly or more difficult than it has to be. And we're really hoping that this is a place where we can move forward.
Okay, another caller, John. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. And my comment is, we're the number four exporter of coal in the world, number two for coking coal in the world. And the idea that the coal companies will just decide, oh, well, we'll take, you know, 30% less coal out of the ground and release our reserves 30% slower is not reality. Unless there's some type of export control on where we send this coal to and what we do with it, the idea that we can take a 30% reduction in the United States with the large amount that we export and it'll do any good for the environment is just a fairy tale.
So you're looking at, look, we export a lot of coal all over the world. So as long as we keep exporting that coal, then it's not going to make much of a difference in fighting climate change. Is that your point?
That's my point. Instead of taking that 30% and putting it into an EPA-regulated energy-producing factory, we're going to export that coal to someplace like China, India, South Korea, or Japan, the top four exporters, and they're going to use it for whatever they want. That's not going to have as much environmental safeguard as we have here.
All right, John, thanks for that call. So, Jody, John makes a great point, but I don't think the executive office can do anything about our coal exports.
Well, just a couple comments on that. It's a very interesting point. First of all, EPA in this rule, in the proposal released today, says very clearly, first of all, that coal will continue to supply 30% or more of our electricity even out to 2030. So if you think about that, still 30% or more, that's a pretty big share for coal still. So I'm always a little worried. I know your guest didn't say this, but I'm always a little worried when folks say, you know, war on coal as a result of these rules. I don't. If it's a war being fought, it's being done ineptly, because if you're still at 30% coal in 2030, you haven't really driven coal out. But it's still a fair point to say, well, look, what happens with coal exports? The data really isn't all in yet, but what we have seen so far in the data is we don't see massive increases in exports coming as a result of the rule. It's true that other parts of the world are eating up a lot of energy, like China is consuming a lot of energy, but they are not likely to adopt coal in place of other things unless there were a dramatic price drop in the coal industry that somehow makes it the very, very cheapest instead of, say, natural gas, et cetera.
Well, so the supply and demand, you cut demand, yeah. You increase supply, you know, that could happen.
Well, I think we're going to have to watch this very carefully, and if we do see changes like that, what's going to be really important is to continue to drive toward a global agreement. You know, the U.S. cannot do this alone. The U.S. should not do this alone. And trust me when I tell you, the U.S. does not want to do this alone. And I think you're going to see this step that the government is taking. They will use that in international conversations to say, look, we're prepared to do this. What are you prepared to do?
Yeah, but the other question is, can Obama do it alone? Because, I mean, he's out of office in 2 years, and another president comes in, they could reverse all this, Jody. Really quick on time. So this is not something
really quickly. You're right. It's not as durable as legislation. A new law from Congress is really what's necessary to lock in a plan that will be something much more permanent. But, you know, once these rules get underway, momentum will change. The states will start driving things forward. And I think it's going to be awfully hard to reverse the direction.
All right. Well, Megan Birch, thank you so much, from Baker Botts Law Firm, and also Jody Freeman from Harvard Law, the environmental law program there. Appreciate you giving us some information about this new EPA regulations proposals from the Obama administration. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to the negotiator's negotiator, and I don't mean a Bill Shatner. Stay tuned. This is The Source on KSTX.